Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. On the show this week, we're joined by Scotland captain and Exeter Chiefs star, Stuart Hogg. Well, I was delighted now to be joined on the podcast by Exeter Chiefs star and our very own Scotland captain, Mr. Stuart Hogg. Hoggy, how are you, fella?
I'm very well, thanks, mate. Good to be back.
Great to have you back on the podcast. You've actually been on a few times over lockdown, but you're becoming almost a permanent fixture. But we're delighted to have you back on. I know it's 26 degrees down in Exeter at the moment. You're not a fan of the heat, though, so no wonder you're inside doing this. But how's it for you down there at the moment?
Yeah, good, mate. Really enjoying my rugby at the minute. We're playing a nice brand of rugby. We're getting some good results. And as you say, the sun's out as well, so we're having some fun. But we're coming into the business end of the season now, so very much looking forward to the next few weeks.
Yeah, you've been there for after the World Cup last year, you moved to Exeter, so you've almost been down there. Do you feel properly settled down there now? Do you feel comfortable and you're kind of getting used to the new surroundings?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, since lockdown started to ease, Jill and I, along with the kids, have been exploring our new home and seeing what's around. So, yeah, look, we've not even scratched the surface with what we've got to see, but now we are enjoying it. As I say, the weather always helps, and we've got some good neighbours on the street. So Jill's settled, the kids are back into nursery and school. It's been good.
And have you managed to get back up at all to Hoyt recently or even Glasgow over the past couple of months?
No, I've not been back in the heartland yet. My parents were down last week for a few days, so you know, it was great to see them. They came down, helped out with the kids and walked the dogs and done the horses for me. So I had a relatively easy week. So they're welcome back anytime now. They're retired. So we need them. We need their help.
You mustn't have much spare time though, Hoggy, with all these games. Are you getting any spare time? Or do you need the grandparent support?
Oh, mossy. Honestly, as I said earlier, I don't know what day it is. We always kind of describe our week as this is a Tuesday day or a Wednesday day, and I think it was last Sunday we said this is Sunday, but it's a Wednesday session. So I was like, you know, what day is it? We're kind of struggling a little bit just now, but as I say, the boys are going well. We're getting some good results, so long may that continue. But in terms of time off, our schedules are really good. We've had. I think, you know, I've been fortunate to be involved a fair bit that we've had 8 and 9 day turnarounds, which has actually been quite refreshing for us. So, as I say, there's two very, very good teams that have been taking the field for us over the last few weeks. And, you know, now we're coming to the business end. It's going to be tough to get out a strong 23 without people being disappointed. So that's an exciting time for us.
How many regular fixtures are left?
I believe there's two league games. Obviously, we're still in Europe, so
yeah.
Hopefully, we'll have as many games of rugby as we possibly can, and give ourselves opportunity to pick up some silverware.
No, I think you will. To be honest, seeing most of the games and whoever plays, it's, you know, under the same banner, and as you say, you're playing really well, beating big teams. It is difficult to get a true gauge in form that I find with the Premiership at the moment because there's so many games and so many teams are rotating. You could get somebody's strongest team against a team that's rotated more heavily and you get kind of discrepancy in results, but whoever plays for you guys seems to follow the process. And admittedly at the weekend there was a defeat, but you're in pretty good shape going into the knockout too.
No, absolutely. I think the best thing for us is nothing really changes in terms of the way we play. You know, our structures are our open play rugby is we try and stick to that as much as we possibly can, and you know, it's drilled into us the way that we train. You know, nothing changes. So everybody that, you know, is on the training field has an understanding of what's happening, which is easy because you get boys that haven't played a lot of rugby for the Chiefs that come in and look like they've been there for a long, long time. So as I say, we're in a good place, but if we're being brutally honest, it doesn't matter now. It matters in a few weeks, and you know, for us this week, you know, I've never been in a position to be playing in a quarterfinal of Europe at home. So I'm buzzing for this week. And honestly, the buzz around the club over the last few weeks has just been incredible. It's such a good place to be at the minute. As I say, everybody's just gearing up for a big few weeks.
And you've got Northampton in Europe this week. So does it make it a little bit easier in terms of knowing what to expect from a fellow Premiership side? I mean, you play them often enough, you know them individually. Obviously, it's Europe, it's a quarterfinal knockout and the intensity will be there, but knowing your opponent or having a clearer understanding than maybe you know, a French team, or even for you guys, a Celtic team. Do you think that makes a difference as well?
Yes and no. Obviously, we don't know how they're going to turn up on the day, but the good thing for us is we played them a couple of weeks ago, so we kind of get an understanding of how they play. We've watched a fair bit of them. Obviously, the main focus for us is making sure we get our stuff right, we get our set piece right, we get our detail right.
I thought you were going to say the main focus on us is to get two defenders on Big Night of Oro, your old Glasgow club mate.
I've trained with him and I've watched him play this season. I just go back to that Scarlets game we played years ago and just tore him apart. So he's going well, the big fella. I think if we manage to come up against each other, I think we'll just put it down to physics and he's going to win it.
What are you thinking? Are you going to just go low chop?
I'm probably going to
use a touchline. Use a touchline, Hoggy. Use a touchline.
I'm going to shout your man and hopefully shoot. Something gets there before.
Shoot touch.
It was a clear two-handed touch and he's not gone down. I'll not be happy.
It's normally, Hoggy, it's normally during the international windows where, you know, a lot more players get the opportunity to show what they can do, and you know, most of that time you'd be away. So have you seen a lot of lads coming through with the extra game time? Is training even more competitive than it normally would be because, you know, everybody's getting that opportunity to show what they can do on the park as well?
Yeah, 100%. As you say, that I think there's 44, 45 boys that have taken the field for us since the Premiership return. So, you know, everybody's fighting for places now. We had a chat the other week after the Bristol game when it was the boys that hadn't played as much, turned over Bristol up there. So, you know, Rob Baxter said there and then that he's finding it very, very difficult to pick teams, which is great for us. It makes the training intensity go right up. It means that, you know, nobody can take their foot off the gas and everybody's just, you know, driving towards the same common goal. So for us, it's exciting. There will be some boys disappointed not to be involved. You know, for me, it just makes me want to work harder, to learn, to improve and make sure that I'm getting the best out of myself. And you know, if I can do that, I'm giving myself every opportunity to play. So, you know, these weeks, these games are the ones you want to be involved in. So, you know, bring on Sunder.
And you've got a few Scottish pals down there now. How are they all going? Johnny, and we had Sam on a few weeks ago as well.
Oh, it's brilliant. You know, Big John, we've spent a bit of time together over the last few weeks and no, he's loving it. He's absolutely loving it. You can see the way he's playing. He's got a big smile on his face. He's loving the new challenges. We Sammy's going all right as well. He's had a fair bit of game time. And obviously Sam Skinner as well. So but we're taking a bit of heat recently because it used to be first of all, it was the Northern Irish boys that were signing and then it was the Aussies. And now it's the Scots, so we're taking a little bit of heat, but we've got each other's backs and we're standing up to the English, so we're fine.
You're looking after Big Johnny, you're showing him the sights, the nice restaurants to eat in.
Yeah, the first few weeks when he first came down, he spent a fair bit of time here, but all he's interested in now is swimming in the sea. That's his new weekly routine.
I don't know, what's he like? Is he quite social? I mean, he didn't really have a reputation of being overly social at Glasgow. He liked to sleep and eat and then repeat.
I don't think he's taking the fact that I was telling everybody he's half man, half mattress. he's kind of avoiding the sleep and getting out to socialise a fair bit. But nah, he's been brilliant. Like as I say, he's loving it. He's thriving. And he's been massive for us. You can see them in the tackles he's made prior to coming to Exeter, but it's probably gone up another notch. And it's actually getting a bit boring when he picks up the defensive award pretty much week on week.
And heading out to the sea, is he going to take up surfing? There's quite a few lads surfing there. I'm going to say it'll be a big board, mind.
It'll be a big board.
He'll surfboard that, jeez.
Don't need a bigger board.
He'll be on the long board.
Surfing in on a wee boat.
he loves it. He just, like, it's something a bit different. I think he enjoys what we're 10, 15 minutes away from, you know, various beaches. So he's doing a fair bit of exploring. But yeah, when I ask him if he wants to go for a coffee or a bit of breakfast, he's like, oh, we'll go after the sea. We need to go to the sea. that's something a bit different. He's enjoying it. So, you know, if he's going to continue to play the way he's playing, we'll just let him be.
And not long now, Augie, an awful lot of rugby to be played in the interim, but not long until the internationals kick off again and the Nations Cup Autumn Series was announced last week, as well as obviously a warm-up game against Georgia and the Guinness Six Nations game against Wales. Can you see that coming around the corner already? Is that already in your thoughts, or is it too much rugby in the middle of it to concentrate too much on it at the moment?
Again, probably yes and no. Obviously, like, I'm buzzing to get back into Scotland camp on the basis that, you know, we've been playing some very, very good rugby towards the end of the Six Nations. So, you know, I'm hoping that we can keep everybody fit. You know, obviously, boys have had a fair bit of game time that are playing in the Prem or playing in top 14. And, you know, Edinburgh had a fair amount of games. Glasgow had a couple. So, yeah, hopefully we can just continue our bit of form. You know, obviously, everybody seemed to enjoy themselves during the Six Nations. You could see that. You know, boys were gutted we didn't get to play against Wales, obviously the correct decision, but you know, hopefully we can go back in and pick up where we left off. You know, a few exciting games come up, obviously finish the Six Nations, Georgia in a warm-up and then the new Autumn Cup, so I'm looking forward to it. But as you say, there's a hell of a lot of rugby to be played before then, and you know, hopefully Johnny and I and Sammy will be playing well for Exeter.
What's the plan ahead of that in terms of Scotland stuff? Will you come into camp pre-Six Nations game, or will you literally be in camp just prior to that and straight into the game?
In the nicest possible way, I'm hoping to miss the Georgia game because that's the Prem final that weekend.
So, yeah.
You know, hopefully if that goes to plan, we'll be there.
Yeah.
And then hopefully, you know, the Sunday or the Monday, straight back into camp to get ready to play against Wales. So, it's mental schedules, but
yeah.
You've just got to get on with it. I think, you know, after speaking to Gregor a fair amount, there's going to be a large majority of boys, a large number of boys going into camp. So, you know, to play six test matches in 7 weeks is going to be pretty telling on the body. So I'd imagine there'll be a fair amount of boys that will be taking the fields for Scotland. So, which is exciting for us again. You give boys opportunities to play, get some valuable experience and ultimately drive the Scotland team forward.
One thing we spoke about, obviously the Georgia game, I think it's a Friday night as well. And as you say, it's a Premiership final prior to that. The week before that, I think it's European finals as well. So there's a lot of really high-end top rugby for those who are involved in it. And then that's going to continue, obviously with the Six Nations rearranged fixture, but then the Autumn Nations Cup. The big thing for me, and you will all agree, I've no doubt, is when you play international friendlies, they're different to international competitive matches in terms of actually meaning something. And I think the introduction of a cup in the autumn will really bring out the best in a lot of players as well. Mm-hmm. And is that something you're looking forward to? That added pressure? I know you're a competitive beast, Hoggy, but even winning a trophy or chance of a trophy and real consequence in that autumn series, that'll help all the players develop a mentality that should help us in the Six Nations as well next season.
100%. As I say, the boys are getting some, you know, valuable experience, but at the end of the day, you're wearing a Scotland jersey and you do everything you possibly can to make sure that we're winning. And the thing for us is, as you say, there's a trophy at the end of it. So, you know, as a professional rugby player, all you want to do is win trophies, and you've got an opportunity to do it. You're going to go all guns blazing. You're going to go ready to rock and roll, and hopefully we give ourselves every opportunity to win silverware. I think we're in a very competitive place at the minute. You know, there's still a chance we can win the Six Nations. There's a lot to be done, but in terms of results to go our way. But look, I feel we're in a very good place. Obviously, we're building towards the next World Cup. So, you know, for us to give ourselves every opportunity to win trophies, it's massive. The boys get some valuable experience and learn along the way. As I say, there's going to be a lot of boys stripped to play for Scotland, and that'll just make us better on the whole. So, you know, little bits and pieces that can go our way. Here's hoping we can be competitive.
As you say, Hoggy, an exciting group of fixtures. Any of the games stand out for you? Looking forward to meeting a few of the Fijians that you know so well.
Yeah, I enjoyed playing against Fiji last time. Obviously, the result was favourable to us, but with the Fijians, you don't know what to expect. They are unbelievable individual rugby players and slowly but surely getting better as a collective as well. So that's going to be a massive game for us, I think, to have the Fijians with their flair come to BT Murrayfield. That's one that we'll be looking forward to.
That's one of the ones I was talking about before, about having the opportunity to play competitive matches against teams that you usually play friendlies against. You know, other than, I think, 2003, the World Cup game against Fiji would be the last time we've played them in a World Cup. But their mindset could be totally different. A head coach and assistant coaches that are known to us as well. I think that'll be a cracking game. I do. It's a third game of 3 years. pool games, away in Italy to start with, home to France on the Sunday, then a 6-day turnaround to Fiji. But I genuinely think that could be a firecracker. It could be the game of the kind of Open Nations Cup to that point, I think.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. I think the big thing for us going into that game is just to pretty much concentrate on ourselves and make sure we get our stuff right, because, as I say, we've no idea what they'll be up to. Obviously, 1 week you'll watch them and they'll be quite structured, and then next week they'll be loose as a goose. So, we generally don't know what to expect, but what we will be ready is to implement our game plan on them. And you know, obviously, Big Vern have an idea how we'll play. You'll know the individuals. So, it's going to be a challenging match for us. But as I say, these are the games you want to be involved in. You want to play in these games, especially at home. So hopefully we can get some fans there as well. That'll be ideal.
The France game as well will be another big game, and a team you know a bit better than Fiji, and a team you've put in a good performance again. Looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I think that was a massive result for us in the Six Nations, to turn over France at home, especially after the way they had started their Six Nations. So, you know, again, another massive challenge for us at home again, which was to our advantage. But again, very similar to the Fijians, like the old kind of way of how France will play. I think that, like they said, we said going into the last game, their defences came on massively, you know, under Sean Edwards. So that'll be another physical test for us. But again, you know, I believe we're in a great place and we can turn them over. And hopefully, as I say, we can keep everybody fit and give ourselves every opportunity of winning.
And when you play Italy away, well, can you look for another Hoggy long ranger for 50-yard try? Just like the last time, is it? You got that in the back pocket?
Yeah, you're hoping. I said to Joe, actually, because I scored against Gloucester the week earlier. And obviously I managed to find my hands in that game. So, I said I'm going to score another one very, very soon. You just get that feeling. Here's hoping.
I know it well.
Yeah, I think the thing for us is just making sure that we go over there with the right mindset and mm-hmm. you know, we're there to do a job. And I think the last time it was 17-0 we won.
Yeah, it's a tough old game, wasn't it? It always is in Italy. But that was like, I think because we'd lost the opening two games of the Six Nations, there was an internal pressure as well. And that adds to the pressure that Italy want to force on you when you play over there. But I thought you dealt with it really well. Didn't really get the rewards for... And the first half of the way I initially played, I thought there was a lot of good pressure, but an important result that set up that opportunity to get a good win against France, and then we'll see what happens.
So it was a real good confidence boost coming off the back of that game, because as you say, we had a couple of good performances prior to that, but just hadn't quite got the results. And I think, you know, if Ali Price got that try early doors in the first half, then I think it could have been a completely different game. But the pleasing thing for us is we struggled defensively over the last kind of while. We scored, you know, three or four brilliant tries in attack, but conceded five or six. To go across to Italy and keep them to 0 points was massive for us, and it gave us a real bout of confidence going into that France game that we knew we had to defend well, and we did again. Mm-hmm. So that was the kind of turning point for us, I believe. You know, we had a good win, defended really well, and kicked on and backed it up a couple of weeks later. So he was hoping we can do the exact same.
What about you, Rach? Where are you guys up to? You've obviously got some big fixtures coming up in the next couple of months. What's happening as far as trying to get everybody back together to get the squad ticking away?
Yeah, so the girls up in Scotland have been back in regional training for just over a month now, I think, maybe longer than that. Mm-hmm. And us lot that are based down in England, we're well into stage two now, so full contact training. And then as a squad, we come together for the first time this weekend. It's got a two-day camp this weekend, and then pretty much just in camp more or less every weekend between now and Christmas. So we've got, obviously, Six Nations at the end of October, two games, and then 3 World Cup qualifiers in December. So similar to the boys in terms of once we get started, we don't really stop.
And is your first game France?
First game back to France, yeah.
Because the French women, they've been playing, their competitive leagues are up and running already, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I think they've been up and running for 2 weeks now. But interestingly, I saw today that I think almost half of their games were cancelled this week due to COVID. So although they're back playing, it does seem a bit stop-starty already, but the national team have been back full-time training for, I think, I mean, this is just judging by Instagram, but I think for at least a month, maybe even two now.
So those, so the camps that you're going to have, you're probably going to have some competitive drills, hit outs, almost game on game stuff that they've got to become really important, aren't they?
Yeah, so I think the plan is that we'll have hit outs in the kind of week leading up to the fans game. The girls that are down in England, we have our premiership starts the 10th of October, so hopefully we'll get a bit of game time there. Yeah, so we'll see. But yeah, the girls up there are definitely going to be having to do a bit of hit-out stuff, which is always fun.
Nothing worse, eh? Internal games.
Nothing worse.
My first experience of Al Kellick was an internal game when I was a young kid, came to Edinburgh, and there was this guy with a scrum cap, but he had hair in those days, and it stuck out the top of the holes in the scrum cap. And I was like, who is this strange-looking character trying to cheap-shot everybody? I think I chased him off the back pitches at Murrayfield, kicking him up the backside.
Never caught me. He never caught me.
Just as well, Al. An internal game. Did you have any in the, before you came back at the end of the lockdown, Hoggy?
We had two. We had a 40-minute one and then a full 80.
Full 80?
I saw they like proper like stripped you, like you were wearing strips and everything, weren't you? So it was pretty...
Oh, it was full on. Yeah, so the first game, like, honestly, like, I walked in, like, it's 2 20-minute halves. So I was like, it's an internal game. I've played in them before. I've played a couple. And I was like, oh, that'll be all right. But I walked into the changing room and had the full match day, like, changing room ready to go. And all the kitten that was laid out, I was like, oh, this has gone up a notch. What's going on here? And boys were coming in, and a couple of them had their headphones on and that. I was like, nah, seriously, we can't be. So I'm like, obviously, not being fully switched on and serious about an hour and a half before the game, and boys are coming in like talking rugby and stuff. I'm like, oh, we're actually playing full on here. So then we had a full on warm up and stuff. Our warm up is bleak. Honestly, it's about 15 minutes of absolute hell. You get your second wind before the game. I've never had that before. And then the week after, I was like, right, I'm prepared for this one. It's, you know, full pre match meal and stuff the night before the game, and half 10 kickoff, Mossy. I ain't ready to play rugby at half 10.
It's like being back in school.
Honestly. And boys, we were knocking lumps out of each other while I was standing in the back admiring it all. But honestly, the intensity was right up there. It's pretty much like playing like a prem game. And
yeah.
I think. Referee?
Oh, yeah, we had the full shebang, mate. Full shebang. I think the best thing for us is it really gave us. You know, the hit out that we needed, we got our intensity right up there, pretty much playing like another prem game. So the best thing was the fact that Rob Baxter in the week up to it was like, picked our teams and a change from the week before. He said, like, boys, look, obviously don't read into the teams. You know, this is absolutely nothing to do with
classic.
The Leicester game. And the 15 that started in the black jerseys on the Friday played against Leicester the following Saturday. But we didn't know.
One team playing in match jerseys, the other team playing in bibs.
The home jerseys against the away jerseys. Honestly, full on with the name and numbers on the back and everything. That we weren't hanging about, mate.
The referees are the key to that. When Mossy and I first started doing them, it wouldn't be referees, so it would be the coach in the middle trying to, and you'd be like, what's he going to do? He's not really looking where he's meant to be looking anyway. So it was, you can imagine some of the guys taking absolute liberties.
What do you mean, some of the guys? I'll go back to the start of this conversation. This big, lanky weirdo coming through the line out trying to ragdoll scum halves left right.
Yeah, as a young fella.
Usually retired.
You get to a point where they're the best games ever. Because see, before you're in the team, it's the only opportunity you get.
It was like
live sessions on a Tuesday at national stuff. If you're not in the team, you love them. If you're in the team, you do not look forward to them at all.
Yeah, the test match Tuesday happening.
Tuesday.
But, mate, you've got boys calling for opposition, what's actually happening, running intercepts for fun, like.
I know, exactly.
I've maybe told this one before, but big Jim Hamilton and I going bashing lumps out each other and then realising that it was an open session, so there was 300 school children standing watching, Kelly Brown in the background shouting, the children, remember the children.
You getting filled in again, will you?
My old sponge fish, Jim. I don't think so.
Hoggy, you will no doubt have been in constant contact with head coach Gregor Townsend over the past couple of months. What have you guys been talking about?
We've been on the phone quite a bit. Ever since the start of lockdown, really. Obviously, Gregor, being Gregor, has watched about a million games of rugby over lockdown and since then as well. So it's been quite good to, you know, obviously get a different voice other than the Exeter coaches on things to be working on, and, you know, what I feel's going well in terms of all the law changes and how the game's refereed, etc. So that's been good. Obviously, we've got a few WhatsApp groups that the boys are involved in. You know, we've had a few Zoom calls over lockdown with, I think there's about 110 players on one of them. We feel we're in an all right place. Obviously, it's good that we're getting continuing learning process as we go along. So it has been quite good. I think he's just dying for the Scotland games to come around so he can get back out in the field and coaching.
And I suppose it's kind of what Rachel was talking about earlier on with the camps come back together. The Zoom calls are all great, seeing everybody. But I guess for you guys as well, the rugby is one thing, but just getting back together as a collective group, you both must be just looking forward to seeing each other, because it's probably felt like absolute ages since you've had the opportunity.
Yeah, I think it'll be good to see the boys again. As I say, we enjoyed each other's company over the Six Nations, and hopefully we can just slot back into that again. I think, as I said, there's going to be a larger squad going into the Autumn Cup. So, it'll be good. It'll be really good. I'm looking forward to it.
And Rach, for you, I guess, because you're not, the Scotland team is back together up just now and you're down in England, it must be a bit of a strange feeling for you that you're obviously part of it, but you're not part of it in the moment. Is that a bit of an odd thing to kind of get your head around?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird one, but I guess we're quite used to it now from a lot of us being down here. And then they do train regionally kind of all the time as it is. But at the moment it is weird just because it's been so long. Like you say, usually we would have had like a couple of camps in this time and games and stuff. And I think the length of time now just feels like we're so disconnected. So I think it's probably more important now than ever that we all do get back into camp, and like you say, the Zoom meetings need to end because I'm zoomed out. I don't know about you, but I really struggle to take in, you know, in team meetings usually I'm absolutely fine, but when you're on Zoom chatting rugby, it's just not the same.
Well, Hoggy, it's been brilliant having you back in the podcast. Best of luck against Northampton this weekend. Hope you get run out in that game as well. And I'm actually surprised you managed to stay on the call, because usually you have really bad technical issues and your wife's not in either. So I'm surprised you managed to stay on the call, but that's been really useful. But best of luck this weekend and beyond, and we'll get you back on soon before the Autumn Nations Cup returns.
Thank you, Jamie.
It's always good to chat to Hoggy. He seems like he's really comfortable and really happy down in Exeter. And I think we'll all agree his performances are showing that as well, that he has kicked on. But Mossy, as a former fullback yourself, have you seen anything in Hoggy in the way that he's playing that's his game's changed, or anything that he's worked on that's improved? Or what do you see when you watch him play for Exeter? Anything different?
I don't think there's anything particularly different, but that's a compliment, because to go to a new league and a new environment and do the same, if not even a bit better, shows you how quality is. Like, I think Hoggy tends to go through kind of spells of scoring tries. Like, he'll always score tries, but sometimes he'll score more than other times. He never doesn't score tries, if I'm saying, but he seems to be in a rich try scoring vein of form. So whether he's been working more on second touch support play, getting behind, his timing onto the set piece plays, the Exeter plays, absolutely brilliant. And that's actually, it should be a simple thing, but it's actually quite a difficult thing to do. So his timing on the ball is excellent. But yeah, I don't see him doing anything he hasn't done before. I just see him being really consistent and in a new environment. That's credit to him. And he's been there a year now, but because of a lot of pressure as well. One of the big signing, obviously, and a big name signing, going to a big club that has a huge amount of depth. And an expectation of pressure on him, but absolutely taking it in his stride, and he's set him top form this season as well.
We'll find out. His form's brilliant. We'll find, and what he needs to do now is in these big games that are coming up. He's a big player for Exeter, as Mosty says. He comes with a big reputation. you need to be playing at the top, top of your game in the knockout stages. Now, I fully expect he will, but the next few weeks are going to be massive for him in the lead up to into the international campaign as well. But, you know, you talk about Premiership semi-finals and finals, that's where he's got to be putting man of the match performances in. And everything's pointing to the fact that it will be between him and Johnny Gray.
The final at the weekend as well, did you see it? The Guinness Pro 14, Leinster, Ulster.
It's like somebody wrote the script, wasn't it? I mean, Ulster came out, fired some shots, looked as if they were going to be good, and then Leinster just slowly grabbed control of that game.
They just suffocate, don't they? Said somebody after the game, somebody said that it's almost as if they can almost just raise it when they have to. They do enough to be ahead, to be in control. Anytime they're under pressure, there seems to be a bounce back that they then can dictate how the game goes. But listen, they're an amazing side, and they made a lot of changes as well. Like they've got Saracens this week in Europe, and the kind of Johnny Sexton was on the bench, for example. There's a kind of Ross Burns played more Pro 14 rugby than Johnny Sexton over the last couple of years, but having the confidence to do it and having the ability to come in, they're just such a well-oiled machine. Someone will beat them. Somebody will come up and find a way. But the depth, the talent they've got, it's pretty impressive.
Am I right in thinking as well that they are completely unbeaten for the whole season as well?
Yeah.
Like they didn't lose one game. That is, it's almost kind of a shame that 2020, the year of COVID, when there's been no fans and there's been no maybe not as much exposure, that's when it happens, because it's maybe not been as talked about as much as it should be. But that is a tremendous sporting achievement in itself, isn't it, Rach?
Yeah, that's incredible. Like in any game, but particularly in rugby, where you know one slip up can result in a try, and I just think to have that accomplishment is unbelievable for any team, and especially playing at the level that Leinster are playing at and the teams that they're playing against, it's incredible.
Yeah, they've just got so much quality and depth and understanding and how they try and play. But as I say, someone will disrupt it. It's going to take a good team to disrupt it. But it's not as if they're aging. Like a lot of young players as well coming through that are dominant players. And structures are excellent, but pretty impressive to go a whole season unbeaten, win a trophy, and they're still in Europe as well. And a lot of that is when they've got a high proportion of internationalists away as well. Like the Irish internationalists don't play all that often. Probably not as much as our guys will play for their club team. But they've got the depth to cope.
Yeah, I thought they were terrific. The way they went up and down the gears. Because Ulster were all right. Ulster did well. They came out. Dan McFarlane had rolled the dice and made a few changes himself. Some high profile ones with Cooney on the bench. But they came out and they looked good at the beginning, but as I say, Leinster just stranglehold of the game. And the way they close games out, the last 20 minutes of the game, there's no way it's going any other way. Which you've got to give them enormous credit for. But the only thought that the issue in the first half, like their line-out was dreadful in the first half, which really gave or could have given Ulster a significant lead, because there was opportunities there on the back of losing so many line-outs, but they seemed to fix it at half-time. But moving into European finals, that's when they've got to make sure they get that absolutely nailed on.
I'd say there's been quite a few games since we've come back post-COVID where we said that people team set piece have been pretty poor. I wonder what the rationale is for that being worse than other areas of the game.
I think it's changes. I think because we spoke about Exeter with Hoggy, the number of changes that happened to make, and even kind of Edinburgh Glasgow games, there was changes between the two weeks. I think it is personnel. I think everybody's still skillful and everybody can still execute, but actually putting it together in a unit, because they've not had so much time together, because it's been disrupted, I think it must just be a continuity thing rather than a skill deficiency. I might be wrong, or it could be penalties. There's a lot of penalties as well that disrupt it, but I don't know, maybe Al will know.
Last in the weekend, a couple of communication errors, which are unforgivable. Like you can't have that. Like you've trained all week, you shouldn't be making those mistakes. Those are the ones that really get to you. But most of the time it was skill errors, and some of that was overthrows, and some of it was poor lifts.
So you would say a lot of skill error.
A lot of skill errors, yeah, and some of that
as well.
Yeah, timing. Like that, I definitely include that in a skill error. That, you know, the difference in a hooker throwing the ball. you know, compared to the flat throw, somebody who's maybe got a reload before they let go of it. All these little things, you know, split seconds make a big difference. And when you are chopping and changing, you're not getting used to those patterns. Like there's definitely throws that suit hookers. And if you're not maybe giving them that easy ball and you're used to somebody else, then it can make a big difference.
Yeah.
The communication ones will be the one that Big Leo Cullen will be. I mean, he'd have been livid at half time. And the fact that the kind of ball's getting lobbed in and there's two pods kind of half going up in the air, nobody really knowing what they're doing. Those ones are unacceptable. Mm-hmm. The skill errors, at least you can work on during the week, or even go back to a simple option, which they did. They started just winning the ball at the front and saying, we'll take this, and you know that should be enough. But we're talking about a team that's unbeaten in the whole season.
Yeah.
We're picking one area that they didn't perform all that well in. But again, we've said it in the past. We said it about Edinburgh after the Glasgow games.
Yeah.
It's nice to have something to work on when you're going into the next big game.
The thing about that game as well, at the weekend, the final, it was a 10 points just after half time. So it was, I think the quick succession of a 3-point penalty, then Robbie Henshaw's interception. So where Ulster had been pretty close, was it 10-5 at half time? I can't remember. I think it was 10-5 at half time. Within 2 or 3 minutes, they've gone 20-5, and it's a completely different game. Like, they're now not able to dig in and hope for a mistake to capitalise, to apply loads of pressure, just one score in it. And that's as tight as the games are, even although there's a team that's won every, you know, undoubtedly the best team, they've won every game. That kind of 3-minute spell of going from 10-5 to 20-5 completely dictates the game. And as you say, then they add another, then they kind of finalise or they finish the game really well. But quite impressive, but it shows you just key moments in games have a big swing in momentum.
There's more rugby this weekend for Edinburgh as they take on Bordeaux in the Challenge Cup. What can we expect from Bordeaux, and what do Edinburgh need to do that they didn't do against Ulster to get a result?
Bordeaux are a good side. A very, very good side. Really well coached. Christoph Urios, who's had a lot of success with teams he's worked with before. He's Oyonnax. I think he got promoted. I think he won the top 14 with Cast. And he's just a, you know, by all accounts, a very, very good coach. And they've got some brilliant players. They've lost Semi Radradra, we've spoken about, but they've still got some quality players. And they drew with Edinburgh in the pool stages of the Challenge Cup, but won every other game. Very strong at home. So it's a big challenge for Edinburgh. But what do they need to get right? I think in some ways it's an easier game for them. Less pressure away from home. French teams traditionally give you opportunities to play and allow you into the game at points, not all the time, because they're so physical, they're so, you know, dominant up front at times, but Edinburgh are a physical side. So Edinburgh just, I think, they just have to manage those little bits of the game better than they did against Ulster. But I think they'll definitely be given opportunities to score, and let's hope they can take them.
I think that's probably one of the biggest things going from their semi-final the other week, is that they just need to take those opportunities when they get them and get points when they have the momentum. I think what they maybe didn't capitalise on was all that first half momentum and pressure they had, which then cost them in the last 20 minutes of the game. So I think if they can get points on the board early and start to take a lead on the game early on, I think they'll have a very good shot.
Bordeaux won at the weekend as well. They're back in top 14, so they beat Brive, I think, 25-20 at home. So Matthew Jalibert, the standoff's a quality player. We've spoken about him before. Cameron Wokey's a big athletic back row player who's going to be a big, big star in France. Kane Douglas, a big second row for Australia. So they've got quality players, but their strength is their cohesive unit, their collective unit, and how well coached they are. So it's a big challenge for Edinburgh, but it's a perfect challenge, isn't it? Like, after the disappointment of last week, what better to go into a situation where you have to pull together away from home? And, well, let's hope they can go one stage further and reach a semi-final.
Yeah, they're talking at the moment about having fans in. Now, it won't be the same atmosphere as if the place was full, so maybe that's a slight benefit to Edinburgh. You know, French teams traditionally so much stronger at home. They do not like to lose in front of the home crowd. It's a slightly different environment, and I actually felt that went against Edinburgh in the semi-final of the Guinness Pro 14. Like, they didn't have the same home advantage. We talked about it beforehand, but I didn't believe they had the same home advantage they would have had, which is it's just unfortunate. It's just the circumstances we're in, but it might work in their favour this weekend as they go over there. Mm-hmm. A little bit with nothing to lose, like you say, Mossy. Like they can go over a bit like Ulster did, throw the dice and have a right go at Bordeaux.
Bordeaux throw the dice. That's the way they play. They're quite they're not carefree. Is the wrong word, but they will try and play a lot of offloading, a lot of quick ball, a hand-to-hand transfer, which if you aren't, and I'm talking about line-out malfunctioning, if you haven't in the swing of things and your timing isn't quite there, there will be opportunities for Edinburgh from what they create themselves, obviously, because they're a quality side, but from what Bordeaux sometimes force. So, well, let's see. We'll find out Saturday, 1 o'clock, isn't it, the game? So let's hope we can get a victory and progress through. The semi-final is the week after, and then I think the final is 2 weeks after that. So, as I said to Hoggy before, there's a lot of rugby from last season, this season and next season all at the same time.
That's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, we'll be back next week with more exclusive content.